Well, for those of you who are here for our work session, it's the time now at 6 o'clock p.m. for that to occur. I'm filling in for the mayor. My name is Lisa Watts-Baskin, and I'm mayor pro tem today. And all of my colleagues on the city council are here as well. But we'll go ahead and hear, have a training and discussion by the city attorney, Todd Godfrey, on free speech, equal protection, and the use of public facilities. He's going to both instruct us and lead the training. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. An interesting night to have this discussion and not have it be the main event, right? I think that this was put on your action items list several months ago as a result of some discussions arising from requests from different parties to come and address the council in ways that I think were generally political or even possibly campaigning in nature. And it raised an interesting discussion about what the city's role is in some of those things. And that has, I think, moved in a direction where we're discussing now, and I hope to discuss with the council tonight, not to present necessarily, but to discuss with the council tonight the city's role in regulating the use of public property and public facilities and respecting in that process of regulation the First Amendment rights that your citizens have and how those relate to those public property and facilities sometimes and what the city's role is. To start the discussion, I just want to, that's a title. This is the actual language of the First Amendment to the Constitution. It's burgeoned thousands and thousands of pages of case law, but it's actually kind of simple. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. So Article 1 of the Utah Constitution is very similar. No law shall be passed to abridge or restrain the freedom of speech or of the press. The First Amendment and the other amendments to the Bill of Rights were implemented to protect the people from abusive or overreaching government. They're actually, at the time that constitutional principles were beginning to be discussed, there were writings circulating in England and in some of Europe extolling the evils of the printing press and the damage that could do to society. So if you think about how differently we see things now, that's kind of the outgrowth, actually, of the First Amendment principles. But what I want you to remember is you are the government. The First Amendment is designed to protect the people from potentially abusive or overreaching power of government. You are the government. So your role tonight is what we want to discuss. What a specific authority do you have as a city? In the state code, it says the boards and commissioners of city councils of cities shall have the power to control the finances and property of the corporation. And I want to talk about some of the specific ways that comes about. And I'm not going to read this to you, but I hope you'll be able to look at this in context. As I said, there have been thousands and thousands and thousands of pages written by the courts on First Amendment issues. One of the more significant issues that arises is specifically that you're trying to consider now. How do we regulate appropriately and fairly and with full respect to the First Amendment, the use of our public property? The Chicago Park District is an agency that has had in the past the responsibility for operating public parks and other public property in Chicago. And they adopted an ordinance, I believe, in the late 70s or early 80s that required someone to obtain a permit in order to conduct a public assembly, parade, or picnic or other event involving more than 50 individuals. That's a fairly common kind of an ordinance. You'll see that across the country. Numerous cities in Utah have had that kind of regulation on their books. And then it had the very specific criteria on which and only on which a permit could be denied. It required action on the permit within a very quick time period, and it provided a quick avenue for appeal if someone decided they didn't want to comply. In that context, there was an application that was brought to display more or less a religious symbol on the Chicago Park grounds. And the city and that commission that oversees the city parks denied the permit, but then approved a few others in rapid succession. And when an action was brought to fight that, the Supreme Court of the United States upheld the petitioner's right to put up their display. And in their language, they said the regulations of the use of public forum that ensure the safety and convenience of the people are not inconsistent with civil liberties, but are one of the means of safeguarding the good order upon which civil liberties ultimately depend. From that, we hear frequently said, good regulations support speech, they don't suppress it. That's your goal. That's what you've stated to us. And so what we want to do tonight is just have an open discussion with you about the kinds of regulations you could implement that would do that, that would support speech and not suppress it. You also have as a name, as a council, at least you've stated, I think publicly and I've heard, the goal of being fair and even-handed when you're permitting uses of your public property. And what that means is one use can't overwhelm another. And on that viewpoint, the courts have been pretty specific about how far constitutional protections go. There was a case that preceded that Chicago case by just a few years. It's called the Capitol Square Review and Advisory Board versus Panette. And in that case, the state of Ohio actually has a statutory provision that makes the public square that surrounds the state house in Columbus a public forum. That's a specific First Amendment term. And what it means is the state has said this particular area is open to all sorts of expressive activities. They specifically open it for that purpose, and they designate it that way to give expression in that place First Amendment protections. Well, the Ku Klux Klan sought a permit to display a cross on the square during December of 1993. That's a distasteful application in most of our minds, I would think. And the board responsible for issuing permits for the display denied the permit application, though it approved other permits seeking to display other religious symbols. A menorah, a creche, were both approved. But the cross application of the Ku Klux Klan was denied. The Supreme Court of the United States upheld the right of the Ku Klux Klan to display a cross on public property. And in the opinion they issued, it was interesting. It was a very sharply divided opinion of the court. But a clear majority of the court made it clear that they would sustain the right of the Ku Klux Klan to display a cross on public property during the traditional Christian Christmas season. So the principle that has come out of that and the several cases that have followed is this. Once you open your public facilities or public property to any kind of permitted activity, everything within the bounds of that has the same kinds of protections, even if they are distasteful, even if they're publicly distasteful, even if the overwhelming majority of citizens would find it distasteful or offensive. The property is open to that kind of expression. So as we start to craft regulations for North Salt Lake on the use of your public facilities, including your parks, potentially your streets, the thing that we have to do is we have to find a way to create regulations that fit within this context. The first point we have to have is the city's regulations need to be content neutral, aimed at time, place, and manner of the display or activity, and not based on the actual message of the communication, whatever that may be. There was a case in Pleasant Grove not too many years ago where an organization challenged the city's display of a Ten Commandments statue on some public property. And the court determined that Pleasant Grove's display of that was done improperly, because with that display they had excluded others that they thought they could have the right, that weren't, in their view, in line with the community's principles and values. So we have to stay away from content-based regulation. We can't regulate the message. We can regulate the time or the place or the manner that it may be displayed, but we can't actually regulate what that message is. The standards for approval of a display have to be specific and reasonably enforced. Those can be delegated to your administrative staff, but there needs to be a reasonable boundary on what those regulations would say and what the official can do with the discretion they may exercise. And you need to have a quick and adequate remedy for someone who feels like they've been applied in a way that wasn't appropriate. And then, of course, the standards have to be evenly enforced for all applicants, regardless of the perceived opinion of the permit applicant, by the public, or the permit official, or anyone else. That's a simple sort of a background, and I know none of that surprises any of you. But then crafting regulations and where you may use them and how they may be applied is a different matter. What I'd like tonight is to hear from the council to be able to discuss with you what your desires are and what your expectations might be. And as we discuss those things, I think it will help Ken and his staff to sort of distill the policy, and we can present to you then regulations that you think you're comfortable with. I think there have been some obvious circumstances that have arisen in the city over the last several years, and they arise in all kinds of cities. You are not unique or alone in this, but the use of public parks is a consistent issue. That issue, in my experience, tends to arise more often during events that are in the park. Festivals, concerts, monthly kinds of events or activities that occur. That's a common place where you see those things. Sign restrictions are a common place where we need to talk about those things. I will be candid with you, in my almost 30 years of representing municipalities, I don't think I've yet read a sign ordinance that is wholly legal in accordance with Supreme Court precedent. Everyone at some level has some kind of content-based restriction, and the ones that don't are generally, Ken and Sherry would probably agree with me, the ones that don't are generally wholly ineffective. But the crafting of a sign ordinance is a difficult thing. What is achievable and what can be done is a sign ordinance that protects expression in ways that are reasonable and does help the city deal with the difficulty, and I don't say this pejoratively, but the clutter that comes from an unregulated sign approach. So there are things you can do to appropriately regulate signs without attacking the message of the signs. The other things that I think are to be considered are the manner in which you appropriately accept or regulate expression on other public property that may be outside of your parks. Parks are, according to the courts of the United States, acknowledged as traditional public forums even without specific statutory or ordinance designations. The courts of the United States have long held that parks are a place where that free discussion of political ideas and other similar discourse is known to occur. And they have protected those spaces for that purpose. Your city buildings or other city property generally have that kind of a classification, but maybe not at the same level. And so there might be ways in which your time restrictions or your manner restrictions could reach a little further than you would want to in your public parks. But those are things that we'd like to hear from you about and to discuss with you, again, to help Ken and his staff sort of distill down from the council the policy you're aiming to achieve, to help us craft the regulations that would be acceptable to you and that you'd like to see. One of the things I will also tell you just before we really start discussing these issues with you is around the last time the Olympics were coming to Salt Lake City back in 2002, a number of local government entities, for lack of a better term, sort of got really anxious and crafted permit and protest and free expression policies. And they put them in their ordinance books. And they sat there for a number of years with very little exercise or very little attention. And over the years, a number of communities have decided to do away with those restrictions for whatever reason. And it's not just the small communities in the state that have done away with them. A number of the bigger communities have also. But that's kind of the outline and the framework of what you have. As you open your parks to speech, you just need to understand that it's open to all kinds of speech. And the regulations that you craft to govern the timing of that expression, the manner, that's where you can make sure that the speech is protected and that all viewpoints have the opportunity and the avenue for expression, which is the goal you should have according to the First Amendment, and that I've heard this council express in the past. So tell me what questions you have, and let's start discussing things.
I have a question. A lot of what you just discussed was about permitting and whether or not an individual is permitted, but often what we've experienced in the city is people who do not have a permit to be at an event and then show up. Can you speak to the differences between regulating permits and approving or not approving permits versus free speech of people who just show up at events and want to participate, but they are not permitted? Are we able to restrict that, or would you just tell me what your thoughts are?
You are able to restrict that. And that's a sensitive area for a lot of people, because you'll have an event that is not designed as an expressive activity, right? One of the things I've seen in a lot of other communities is a nightly concert series, and people show up and want to put up a political booth on the corner of the property where the concert is held. That's normal. During campaign season, if you have farmers markets or something like that, you'll see folks who want to be in that place, and they're not selling, and so they don't believe they need a permit. You can regulate that activity if you wish to, and you can do it reasonably, logically, and within the bounds of the First Amendment. One of the things that I think I've seen kind of a proliferation of and concern from municipal officials about over the last 10 to 12 years maybe is assuring that a particular expressive activity or person, for lack of a better term, doesn't overwhelm the rest of the activity, right? That it doesn't expand beyond what a reasonable space would be, or you know what that can be. Those are things that can be regulated reasonably within your time, place, and manner restrictions. You can do that. It is, I know, a little bit awkward at times to look at a particular event of one kind and try to regulate a different activity which isn't within the character of the activity you're holding, right? But you can legally do that.
And I have one more question. Can you speak to freedom of speech that feels threatening to people, if there is a display or if there's language that feels threatening harm to them, how that impacts how we can or should regulate?
I can tell you what the courts say, but I don't know that it's going to answer your question. So the First Amendment protects everything up to the line of what they call in the case law fighting words. If you use words that are in the view of courts, this is what's hard, intended to or likely to incite violence or a violent response, that's where the First Amendment ends. I think that's expressed sometime as your First Amendment right ends where your fist hits my nose. It's that kind of an expression. That doesn't give you any comfort because it's hard to define, right? And so I will tell you the times I've run across something like that in my career are extremely rare. The interest that I hear most communities talk about in that kind of a vein, and I, just to be candid about it, in a particularly politically explosive time frame like this one, where you have polarization of political viewpoints, and is how do we keep the peace if we allow every kind of expression in one place? And that can be hard, but you have an obligation under the First Amendment if you're going to open it for one, right? So there are a number of different ways I've seen permitted agencies do that. If it's a single activity, like somebody comes in, if you adopt a regulation that says to use the city park for an event that's going to have more than 50 people, like the Chicago-based restriction was, if you do that, it's legitimate for you to deny a permit for the same time. But you have to provide then the opportunity to use that park or that place on another day. You have to open up the alternative channel of communication in a way that's reasonable and is appropriate. But you don't have to allow those two competing activities on the same night. That's a concern that I hear from a lot of municipalities. We don't want the explosive nature of that in our community. That's a difficult decision. It is hard to administer. It sits on the border of feeling like you're curtailing expressive activity if for some reason you feel like an alternative time isn't going to be appropriate. But it is. It's legally appropriate, and you can do that. If you've got a broader event that's not just a single event, and you're trying to treat those kinds of things, you have to do that at an administrative level, really, and figure out how to manage those things. And that can be done, and that can be done reasonably under the First Amendment in ways that are appropriate.
And then this is my last question. Have you ever heard of, or is there any precedent for the city making effort to make clear that these are not the views of the city? So if someone were to be standing in the park displaying something or speaking in a certain way, that maybe we have little signs that we put up and say, not the views of the city. And I'm speaking specifically because of some action that happened at food trucks recently, and I have had residents come to me and tell me that they did not feel safe to go back to the food truck nights again, and that they thought it was the city that was espousing these ideas. Have you heard of anything like that?
I've heard that's actually discussed in some of the Supreme Court's precedent and case law. That kind of an approach has never gained a majority of the court opinion yet. But one of the provisions of the Chicago law, and that law was argued not necessarily under strictly free speech, but actually under a religious establishment clause kind of an argument. One of the provisions of that Chicago ordinance said, if you're undertaking some kind of religious or political display, you need to have a sign on your display that says this is not a representation of the viewpoint of the city. I've never seen that kind of a requirement actually litigated, so I can't necessarily tell you where that stands. But the majority view on that from the court, and what I'm forecasting a little bit based on the court I know now, the majority view I think this court would see is it's wholly unnecessary, and it doesn't really matter to the actual answer of whether or not the restriction or the permit is valid or invalid. The court tends to say most people understand the nature of a public forum for speech, and there's not enough of a tie to the government agency to worry about that or to be concerned in the First Amendment jurisprudence. Now, that's what the court says.
I have a question. Can you speak to your experience working with multiple cities and over multiple years, dealing with cities that tend to be more proactive on regulations and cities that are less proactive on regulations? I tend to feel that the First Amendment is to protect speech we don't like. We don't have to protect speech we like. Everyone's okay with that. And so as distasteful as that can feel, I feel like government should be, for the most part, laissez-faire, hands off, and that public forum is understood, like you said, by the people as public forum, and our job is not to enforce or express personal opinion. I would think that maybe more regulation brings more heartache at the end of the day, but what has been your experience with different cities and the way they approach it?
I don't know that I can tell you that I've seen a really distinct line about those who have had more issues with it or without it. You know, I did legal work for Farmington for years, and leading up to the 2002 Olympics, they put in permit and protest provisions. They were expecting protests based on the rodeo that was attached to the Olympics that they were going to hold. They have had issues over the years with PETA demonstrations at Lagoon, over the zoo at Lagoon. And I do know that those permit provisions and the review of those things has burdened city administration in some ways. I won't say that that burden's inappropriate. I won't say that it's wrong. I would just say it has been an administrative burden on the city that they've handled and they've dealt with. Had they not had those provisions, I don't know what things would have looked like there. You know, I'm not sure I can tell you. I don't know that I can draw a line that says, you know, this city has a heavily regulated approach to the First Amendment and this city has nothing, and, you know, the difference is, I don't think I have that much. And, you know, candidly, these kind of things have tended to work towards the big cities historically. I'm not sure that's still the case. I'm not sure it's going to continue to be that way. But I don't know if I can draw a line for you, Councilmember Jackson. I just haven't seen enough, I don't think.
Thank you.
Is there a distinction between can a city make a distinction between advertisement and political expression?
Give me an example of what you're talking about. The law treats commercial speech moderately differently than it treats pure political speech. There is a heightened protection for pure political speech, and I wouldn't call it a lesser protection, but a little different kind of an approach to regulating commercial speech. So yeah, there's a distinction. At the end of the day, will it make much difference for you as you start to look at the regulation of your public spaces? I'm not sure it will. But there is somewhat of a difference, yeah.
So my mind is going to where I favor a fairly low administrative burden, and also just sort of something that is simple for the public to understand. And so my mind is going to the where. Well, where would we want expression to occur? Where would we not? And that it should be allowed somewhere. Yeah. And so I don't have a clear answer to that, but I remember, you know, one of our people that ran for council, Colin Larson, he would occasionally pose questions, which I thought were fair, like, well, I need to be able to put my signs somewhere so that I have visibility, you know? He had some of these kinds of thoughts, but at the same time, we don't really want sign clutter everywhere. So it sort of felt like, well, we need to have some kind of balance in that way. I'm not sure that we have it right or wrong, but...
Todd, I have a couple questions in particular with what we're dealing with in our city. We've got some signs that we, as a city, made a discretionary decision that we could go ahead and post them. And they were posted, I think, based on content and freely in different locations. And then it became burdensome that there were so many. So there is a time, place, manner restriction where one could say within a certain square footage or within an acreage, you can only put up two signs or whatever. Is that correct? You can limit the amount of signs?
Yes, on a certain level, I think that is correct. One of the things that I am concerned about, and there have been a few cases that have gotten towards this issue, I think there is a case, and I believe it came out of a federal district that includes New Hampshire, and a town there had regulated this size of a sign that could be demonstrated on private property.
Oh.
Period. And my memory is that the federal district court looked at that and said, look, I understand that's content neutral, but in its application,
right,
that is burdening political expression in a way that's inappropriate. And the reason why was because some guy had put up a sign that was literally like 6 square inches larger than the town sign prescription that had a political message on it that I guess the majority of the public found distasteful. So they complained and complained and complained, eventually said, oh, that sign's 6 inches too big. They made him take the sign down. So while we could craft a content-neutral restriction that way, if it ends up having some kind of an effect that is burdensome to speech, then even those, you can only have this many, so much square footage of signs within this space, might potentially be a problem, right? That's the only caution I have in that respect. And one of the reasons I say that is because I had a client years ago who hated the, and I can't say this is rational or reasonable, but this client hated the 2-post metal signs with the paper in between that said open house today and had the address on it, right? They're always stuck in the park strips of town on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. They were somehow bothered by these signs, and so they wanted to outlaw them. And their approach was to say, we're not going to have any signs within the park strip. That's city property. We're not going to allow any signs. And there was a pretty strong response to that from the Realtors Association that alleged sort of a First Amendment right to be able to do that. And they made some arguments that at the time I found maybe not compelling, but persuasive. And so I think within reason that approach is there and it's something that would be looked at. I think we have to be careful about what the overall effect of that might be in particular applications. But it is a normal approach in sign ordinances. I don't think it's been stretched into First Amendment regulation. It's kind of a normal commercial approach for properties, right? You tell people you're gonna have so much signage on your property, it can be one monument sign, one building sign, you know, that kind of thing. And then this is the square footage of signage you're allowed. That's normal, that's a commonly seen approach. I haven't seen that stretched into broader application, and I haven't heard it argued yet that might implicate First Amendment rights.
Okay, we know that we cannot put campaign signs in park strips, and we see it happening all the time. It's a burden for people who run for office, but that's the rule because it's the city's property and it's easement property. And for those of us who run
but
for office...
But we could, right? I mean, huh? I'm an honest question. But we could change the code if we wanted to.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. But that is creates problems that we see in the city. Also, the city doesn't want to have to enforce those.
Yeah.
Because some people will abide by the rules and others will not. And when you're running for office, you know how that feels when you've done your job and done it correctly and you see someone else breaking the rules and then you realize, well, there's no recourse. Right, that's not content-based, that is time, place, manner. But in terms of resources, city resources, to regulate that, it's probably a waste of money.
Waste, a large expenditure, yes.
Yeah, have you seen cities that have tried to enforce it?
Yeah, and I'm aware of one city that, it wasn't in this state, it was in Washington State, that backed off of an ordinance because they defined political signs. And then they regulated them, and that's a content-based restriction.
Yeah.
So if you take those out of the park strip, you take everything out of the park strip.
Right.
That's the point. And I've seen that approach. I haven't seen a city really hang on to that one. Like, I haven't seen anybody defend that one down the line very far, but I have seen that. And I think it's probably in a number of ordinances around this state. And I suspect in a few of those cases, it's probably largely unenforced because of the administrative burden we've discussed.
Okay, now I have another question. Let's say you have a city that proposes a mural. We're going to have a mural. We're going to have people come in and pitch whatever mural they want on a public wall. Mm-hmm. How do we, without being unconstitutional, how do we as a city council pick which mural goes up?
Yeah, I've seen public art that's been approved through committees and then selected by a committee, approved by a council decision. Those are questions I've never had raised yet
Yeah.
in the First Amendment context. Do I think at some point they could? Yes. Most of the time you protect that at the front end by indicating in your solicitation for responses for the public art you're looking for, the nature of what you want in the art. And so that's the thing that I think has provided the check on that particular issue. I think it's why I haven't seen it get to that point of being a First Amendment issue.
Okay, what about cities that have, like we do, that you can't post a campaign sign within a certain footage of the city hall or a polling location?
That's a state law. That's in the state election code. And thankfully, that the display of those signs is electioneering by definition in the state code. So that's a state code restriction. Okay. And thankfully, that is not yours to wrestle with.
Yeah.
Other than in enforcement from time to time.
Yeah. What would be recommendations that you have for us?
I think it would be reasonable for you to put a simple and basic permit requirement for events that are held on city property like city parks. And I think a simple permit requirement that would generally, in my mind, be a nominal fee or without fee. And that would restrict the space that is used by every permittee is probably a reasonable approach to take without regard to what they're doing, whether they're selling vegetables or passing out leaflets or flyers or hats or whatever it may be. I think that's an appropriate place to go. I have not undertaken heavy restrictions around city halls. And I know sometimes that this is a place that, you know, is a little sensitive for that. But in my experience, the electioneering kind of provisions of the state election code have handled that. And I've had very, very few actual issues around city hall or other public buildings that have been difficult. I will tell you honestly and truthfully, I don't like local election season because of campaign signs and the issues they raise. They're never easy to answer. They are hard on staff. But I think the kind of restrictions that I generally see in most cities now, which are even-handedly enforced and easily understood, are fine. I don't find those objectionable. So from my seat, looking at this city, and this is council, this is not legal advice because, you know, I've kind of told you what I think the parameters of the law are, but I would think a permit requirement for a very small or nominal fee that is without, you know, any kind of basis in content would be a good place for the city to start and would probably address any issues that you may see as a general rule.
And to be certain then that fee, the nominal fee, is uniformly applied regardless of message. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody else have questions for our attorney? Any comments? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
What time is it now?
6:51.
We have about 10 minutes to start. It's 6:51 and 7 o'clock is the next meeting. Would you like to take a brief break? I beg your pardon? I can't hear. The clocks are wrong. Oh, it is 6:51. Okay. All right. Well, let's take a, how about a 5-minute break? You people don't even seem like you're interested in that long of a break. Do you want to continue?
Do we have anything else in the work session?
No, nothing else in the work session. Okay, we'll take a brief break. There is a couple seats there on the front row, and there is one seat, I'm going to call that the bullpen, and the reason why is that when you want to speak and make a public comment, we'll get into this in more detail, but there is a sign-up sheet right next to that chair. So if you're the next person, please sign your name legibly so that we can get your comments and a proper spelling for your name in our minutes. It would be a huge assistance to our city recorder, whose job it is to keep minutes of all the comments that are made. Even though you've signed in at the door, If you would want to, when you get here and you're going to make a public comment, please sign in there on that little board before at the time. But anyway, we'll take a minute to, we'll take 5 minutes for a break. Thank you.